Talk Show.
Recorded live.
All right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. We're going to have Pastor Ken Gregg calling in as well, and William Fink will be with us as well. Bill is looking up some verses in Acts chapter 13, and since I have an internet question or email question posed about Acts chapter 13, let me see if I can find the actual. Regarding Acts 13:46, question. Isn't Paul saying in this verse that since Israel rejected Yahshua, the gospel was being offered to the non-Israelite Gentiles? That's the question, okay? So I'm going to read that verse through verse 48 because the word Gentiles is used in all three of those verses, and they say this. Then Paul and Barnabas waxed bold and said it was necessary that the word of God should first have been spoken to you. Of course, referring to the Judeans. And, of course, now that I'm looking at it, verse 45 says, but when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with envy and spoke against those. Now, that word Jew should be Judeans. And, of course, being the Judeans, the true Judeans of the house of Judah, not the false Judeans of Edomite blood. That's the distinction here, folks, because the Jews that we know as the Edomites and Canaanites and Khazars had nothing to do with either the house of Judah or the house of Israel. And that's where the confusion comes in. But getting back to verse 46, let me start at verse 46 again. Then Paul and Barnabas waxed bold and said, it was necessary that the word of God should first have been spoken to you, Judahites, but seeing you put it from you, and judge yourselves unworthy of everlasting life, lo, we turn to the Gentiles. Okay. Now everybody in the world assumes that this word Gentiles means non-Israelites. Continuing with 47 and 48. For so has Yahweh commanded us, saying, I have set you to be a light of the nations, which is the proper translation here, that you should be for salvation to the ends of the earth. Verse 48, and when the nations heard this, they were glad, and they glorified the word of the Lord, and as many as were ordained to eternal life believed. Okay, all right, Bill, how should we understand these three verses, and you know what's going on here?
Well, what's going on is Paul is telling, well, first, the Judeans had to receive the gospel first, and that's true.
Right.
All these synagogues or assembly halls of Judeans spread throughout the Roman world were actually attended in large numbers by Greeks and Romans.
Okay.
Also.
All right.
Who were being read the scripture.
Okay.
Now, Paul is telling these particular Judeans in this particular synagogue
mm-hmm.
that he is going to leave them, depart from them, and speak directly, bypass them, and speak directly to
uh-huh.
people.
Okay.
Okay? Now, Paul, I'm going to paraphrase my own notes from my book on Luke's translations from Acts 13:46.
Okay. Now, let me get the picture here. Are we talking about the people like standing outside the synagogue? Is that
No. The people in the assembly hall.
Okay.
And there's a reason why in Greek it's the word ethnos is used.
Okay.
And I'm going to get to that in my notes.
Okay.
The phrase here is ta ethne, which is the Gentiles.
Okay.
It's the accusative plural of the word ethnos. Strong's number 1484, which in my translation of this passage is the people.
Okay.
Now, there are several other places in the New Testament where the context dictates that the word ethnos be rendered people.
People.
Not
okay.
nation, not no, heathen.
And certainly not
people.
Gentiles.
Now, right, and you can take note of this. Among these places are Mark 11:17,
okay.
Acts 8:9, and Acts 18:6, and 1 Corinthians 12:2.
Oh, okay.
The King James Version has people for the word ethnos at Acts 8:9.
Interesting.
And note that the King James Version at Isaiah 56:7, which is quoted in Mark 11:17,
okay.
in the Septuagint, Sir Francis Brenton wrote people for ethnos there, and at Leviticus 22.
Okay.
Now, I haven't checked the Septuagint elsewhere.
Right.
It's an absolute fallacy committed by many theologians that here, Paul is inventing a new religion. That's what they claim.
Right.
Rejecting the Judeans and bringing Christianity instead to some Gentiles.
But now that I'm thinking about it, people is actually a much better translation for Gentile, ethnos than Gentile.
There's a reason for that in Greek, and I'm going to try to make that clear coming up, but first I want to discuss this.
Okay.
Many Bible editions cross-reference Matthew 21:43 to this passage at Acts 13:46.
Okay.
Somehow support this fallacy.
Okay.
And that's where Christ says that the kingdom of heaven will be taken from you and given to a nation bearing its fruit.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Instead, if you really want to cross-reference Matthew 21:43 to something, you should cross-reference Matthew 21:43 to Daniel 2:44 and to Micah 4:7-8.
Okay.
Okay, where Micah 4:7-8 says, talking about a dispersed to Israel,
yes.
I will make her who is cast far off a strong nation.
Speaking of
now,
the dispersion.
Right. In answer to the fallacy of the theologians who maintain the view that Paul is inventing a new religion here, firstly, Paul is found in other Judean synagogues or assembly halls speaking to Judeans at Acts 14:1.
Okay.
At Acts 17:1 and at Acts 18:4.
Okay.
So right there they proved to be liars.
Right.
Now and also elsewhere. Secondly, in context, here Paul is addressing the assembly hall leaders and is rejecting them. Not the Judeans in general, but the assembly hall leaders of the Judeans.
Oh, okay.
Those opposing him in this one local assembly hall.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And turning to the people making up the assembly.
Right. So the context is very local. It's not broadly regarding all of Judeans.
It's absolutely local.
Uh-huh.
And this assembly consisted of Judeans and Greeks and probably also Celts, Romans, and Phrygians.
Okay.
They're all Adamites.
Right.
They all descended from Adam.
Uh-huh.
And most of them descended from Israelites.
Okay, so most of them are dispersed.
There are Phrygians known to be in this area in history, and they descended from Japheth.
Right. So most of them are people of the dispersion.
Right. Now, here's the key to why this should be translated people.
Okay.
A mixed group in Greek cannot properly be termed a laos.
Okay.
A laos is the general word. Laos is... It's number 2992 in Strong's Concordance.
Okay.
That is the general word for people in Greek.
Okay.
A laos is a people as a collective unit.
Uh-huh.
But a group which consists of various ethnic backgrounds
mm-hmm.
is not properly considered a laos.
Even though they're all Israelites.
Well, right, but they're different. They're different nations in the Greek mind.
They're coming from different countries.
Exactly.
Yes.
And so the term ethne has to be used,
okay,
which means nations
right.
of people in this place.
Okay,
it's people from different nations.
Okay,
so they can't be called a laos properly.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Now in laos is in Little and Scott in Liddell and Scott's lexicon the people both in singular and in plural. It means the people.
Mm-hmm.
So here we have multiple peoples. We have Judeans.
Right.
We have Romans. We have Greeks. And that's the way the Greek mind distinguished things. So they're not a laos, and they're not a laoi, which would be the plural. They're ethne. They're
mm-hmm.
they're nations. That's
right.
the way
right.
it is.
Okay. And, so the proper definition or the proper translation here is people. But there's certainly – you can't take this out of context into discussing other races of people.
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people are Adamic people.
Right.
And that's who the message is to.
Yeah.
And it can't be to anybody else.
Okay, so then verse 48 becomes very understandable. And when the people heard this, they were glad and glorified the word of the Lord, and as many as were ordained to eternal life believed. So we're talking about Israelites of the dispersion who were very glad that Paul spoke to them.
What we're talking about.
Yeah.
And Paul is speaking locally at this one particular assembly hall.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
we see that when he appears in those three other chapters I cited at other Judean assembly halls talking to Judeans.
Yes. Yes.
So the mainstream Christianity is proven wrong in every single chapter of the Bible that they comment on.
Right.
They're wrong.
Yeah. Well, certainly this word Gentile has thrown the entire Judeo-Christian world into a tizzy, falsely interpreting as meaning non-Israelites.
Absolutely, but they have to read the language in the historical context that it was used.
Yes, yes. Okay, somebody in the chat room was asking for your website, and so Patricia already put it up. Okay, so very good. Thank you, Patricia. All right, so let's get into Romans chapter 4, and we'll just wait patiently for Pastor Greg to call in. So, yeah, and I wasn't aware that Gentiles is translated as people in certain places. That's very interesting. And that certainly actually makes more sense than translating the word ethnos as Gentile at any point. At any point. People makes a whole lot more sense, certainly in this context and probably in most contexts. Okay? All right. So do you have – it's been a while now since we've actually addressed the book of Romans. Do you have any comments to set up Romans chapter 4 before I get into it?
Well, not really.
Okay,
we're about to see that the definition of the faith of Abraham.
Okay, right. So let me just back up to verse 29 in chapter 3, because here we have, again, a horrible translation. Verse 29. Is he the God of the Jews only? Of course, folks, just scratch out that word Jew. It doesn't belong in there. Is he the God of the Judeans only? Is he not also of the nations? Yes, of the nations also. What nations? The Israelite nations. Seeing it is one God which shall justify the circumcision by the faith and uncircumcision through faith, do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid, yea, we establish the law. So he underscores and points out, no, we're establishing the law. What's going on in verses 29 and 30 here? What are these expressions? Justify the circumcision by faith and uncircumcision through faith. What's the difference here?
Well, basically, there is no real difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Yahweh... I have seen that it is Yahweh alone who will accept the circumcision from faith.
Okay.
The uncircumcised, who are basically, they already believe that they should be accepted simply, the circumcised should be accepted simply because of their circumcision and because they perform these rituals. But no, Paul's saying no, they'll be accepted through the faith.
Okay.
And we're going to see the distinguishment. In Romans chapter 4, a little later on, we're going to see that distinguished and the reasons for that.
Right, right. Okay, now, the reason I'm asking is because this is really confusing, because in one part of the statement it says by faith, and in the next final clause here it says through faith. Is there any difference?
Well, actually, my translation says that accept the uncircumcised from faith.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the uncircumcised, they don't really have the faith.
Okay.
The circumcised, they do have the faith, but they also have the rituals.
Oh, okay.
So they have to choose the faith over the rituals.
Right, right. Okay. So the word through here is very confusing. It through and by simply, as far
well,
as I'm
right,
concerned.
Right, but the uncircumcised, they already have the faith. They already have the expectation and the hope. Where the uncircumcised, their ancestors had more or less lost that that expectation and that hope.
Uh-huh.
And they don't have the faith.
Right.
It's being brought to them again.
Yes, yeah, okay. All right, so that the through should actually be translated as from. Is what you're saying?
Well, no, the by should be translated as from.
Oh, the by.
They're already in the faith.
Okay, so which shall justify the circumcision from the faith and uncircumcision through faith. Okay.
Right. Because the uncircumcised don't have it, and it has to be brought back to them, and the circumcised have it, but they also have rituals.
Yes.
So is it from faith or from rituals that you're just. Your justification comes from faith, of course.
Okay. And faith does not exclude the law, because. It's the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who most certainly practiced the law.
Right,
okay.
And Paul certainly says here, certainly not. Rather, we establish the law.
Right, and underscore, we establish the law, folks. Okay, all right, chapter 4. What shall we then say then that Abraham our father, as pertaining to the flesh, has found? Of course, now, here is the
Well, here's, first, there's a serious problem here in the King James.
Okay.
And the King James follows the Codex Bizei and some late manuscripts. And the Codex Bizei is a rather late manuscript compared to some of the ones that exist, with having father here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The King James, following later manuscripts, has only father, but the greater number of early manuscripts and all of those which predate the 5th century have forefather.
Ah.
Abraham, our forefather.
Uh-huh.
Surely one may attempt to spiritualize the word father,
uh-huh.
but forefather is absolutely genetic.
Yes.
Just as Paul told the Galatians and the Corinthians, he also tells the Romans that they indeed descended from Abraham and were the seed of Israel.
Right, right. Okay, well, when I read this, I assume that it means forefather, that is, our literal father. In the
well,
flesh,
right, but
because
you know,
it says,
that's not what the church teaches.
Yeah, but it says, as pertaineth to the flesh. How can
yes.
you interpret this any other way?
And well, they do it. I don't know how, but they do it. They get away with it for a lot of people that don't
yes.
investigate.
And so what you're saying is that the translation as father is more susceptible to universalization as the word forefather, which is, in fact, how it should be translated.
Absolutely.
Interesting. Okay, verse 2. For if Abraham were justified by works, he has whereof to glory, but not before God. For what says the Scripture? Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. Okay, now, I couldn't find the email, but another person sent me an email claiming that somehow Paul has got this backwards, that it's not that Abraham had faith in God, but that God had faith in Abraham. Is what the, now, going back to Genesis 15:6, that's clearly not what Genesis 15:6 says. It says that Abraham had faith in God.
Absolutely, and this does quote Genesis 15:6, and actually Paul's teaching Old Testament Christianity here because there's about 5 or 6 quotes right in this little section from the Old Testament.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham, Yahweh, God knows us. We don't know him.
That's right.
And he doesn't need to have faith in us. He knows which way we're going to go
right.
when we're presented with a fork in the road.
Right, right. And what I was trying to explain to this person is that when Abraham went to sacrifice Isaac on the altar, he was not obeying, or, you know, there's no law, you know, because he was trying to say that that Paul was teaching us to go against the law here. And I was trying to tell him, there is no law that requires a father to sacrifice his son on an altar.
None whatsoever.
There is no such law, okay? So then by what other means could Abraham take his son and put him on the altar and prepare him for sacrifice? It had to be faith, because there's no law.
That he was talking to God, and he believed him.
Yes.
And he already had the promise that his offspring, his hair would come from his loins.
Right.
He already
right.
had
right.
that specific dictate that his hair would come from his loins, even though he tried to choose another hair.
Right. And
he
even
already
though,
had the promise that yeah. his name would be called in Isaac.
Yes,
that
exactly.
everything would be through Isaac. He already had the knowledge concerning Ishmael that he was to be sent away.
Yes.
And he believed, and we're going to see that Paul defines the faith of Abraham not as the fact that Yahweh would somehow spare Isaac on the altar.
Mm-hmm.
The faith of Abraham was believing that his offspring would become many nations.
Right, right. And whether, you know, whether it be through Isaac personally or whether he would have another son, even though both Isaac, Sarah and Abraham were old.
Right, but Paul even states in Hebrews that Abraham's faith was such that his belief that Yahweh would make it true,
mm-hmm.
that in Isaac would be his seed, and that he would have all these offspring, that he, and Paul states this explicitly in Hebrews, that he believed that even if Isaac died on the altar, Yahweh would raise him from the dead.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. So it's definitely faith, because there's no law that requires Israelites to sacrifice. In fact, quite the opposite. The law in Israel says we're not to sacrifice our children as the Canaanites did by throwing them into the fires of Moloch. Okay.
Absolutely, and it's unheard of to sacrifice your child. However, I'm going to revert, and I've been saying this 5-6 times over the last few weeks, the important significance of this event that Isaac was placed on this altar was because when Abraham, who had control over the life and death of his son,
mm-hmm.
put his son, he had ownership of his son.
Right.
I mean, that's the way the ancient world was.
Right.
Put his son on that altar. He dedicated Isaac to Yahweh, and Isaac became the full property of Yahweh.
Right, right. And that's why Ishmael and the sons of Hagar and Keturah had to be sent away so that they could not interfere with the inheritance of Isaac.
Right. And Ishmael had no part in the inheritance, even though, and we just discussed this, I think, last night, he was circumcised, and he probably believed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And Abraham didn't want to send him away.
And Abraham didn't want to send him away.
But
right.
Sarah insisted upon it.
Abraham grieved.
Yeah, right, right. Because the inheritance was to come through Sarah and not through Hagar or Keturah.
And that shows the specificity of the inheritance being genetic.
Right.
Solely genetic, and it's still genetic to this day.
Yes. And even genetic within the particular race, because Hagar, she was an Egyptian Adamite of Ham, right?
Yes, and she was almost absolutely a full-blooded Mizraimite,
right.
which is a Hamitic
right.
Adamite woman.
An Adamite, and certainly Keturah was too. So even within the race, there's a specific family to come through Isaac, and of course we know that those are the Israelites, okay? All right, very good. Now verse 4. Now to him that works is the reward not reckoned of grace, but of debt. Now, go ahead and explain that real quick.
Well,
of course, this is the King James translation again.
Right. The reward is from favor
mm-hmm.
and not from debt. For the idea of debt being that if you sin, you owe a sacrifice at the temple.
Right.
All right? But
yes.
No, the we're considered righteous through favor. Israel was bestowed with the favor of Yahweh.
Yeah. Okay.
We're all and Paul's going to get into that soon here too.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the judgment of acquittal.
Yeah.
Later on in this chapter.
Yeah. So he's not saying here that the law is abolished or the law has nothing to do, with Israel from this point on, which is the common interpretation here. What he's simply saying is that we were forgiven not because we obeyed the law, but simply because Yahweh decided to forgive us.
Right, and we're also going to see that a voluntary obedience is required of Christians.
Okay, all right, verse 5, but to him that works not, but believes on him that justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. Okay?
Well, but to he not performing rituals,
okay,
but who rather is trusting on Christ, on he who must judge the impious,
right.
His faith is accounted for righteousness.
Yeah.
It's, that works not, that word, the works of the law, the rituals of the law.
Okay.
And that can be established, and that's the way Paul used the term, and that's the way the term is used in the Greek scriptures, the Septuagint.
Right.
Which Paul quoted from very often.
Right.
And I think the only two translators that I've seen that translate that in that manner are myself and Farrar Fenton.
Right, right. Yeah, and since it's absolutely true that the New Testament authors, including Yahshua himself, were referring to the Septuagint more often than, it's hard to say how often they quoted the Hebrew scriptures, which they obviously had available to them.
Right. They definitely did in places quote the Hebrew scriptures.
Yes.
And it's not, we cannot just kick the Hebrew to the curb.
Yeah.
Because not every quote in the New Testament is from the Septuagint.
Right.
Most of them are,
mm-hmm.
but not all of them.
Right. And numerous scholars have pointed out the fact that quotations of the Old Testament in the New Testament invariably, almost invariably, agree better with the Septuagint than with the Masoretic text. Okay.
Yes.
But this is because the Masoretic text is a Jewish version of the Old Testament Hebrew, which they highly edited and redacted. And that's why, you know, so if we had the unedited version of the Hebrew scriptures that the Jews didn't get their nasty little fingers on, then we would expect a greater agreement with the Hebrew as well, wouldn't we?
Right, and we do have closer versions of scriptures to the, scriptures in the sense of writing.
Okay.
To the Hebrew in Josephus and in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Okay,
They're not perfect either. I mean, they all have faults by
right.
that. I mean, if you want to know why all the scriptures have faults, just go read Jeremiah 8:8. The pen of the scribes has turned the word into a lie.
Right.
It says, you think you have the law.
Yeah.
Pen of the scribes has turned it into a lie.
Every priest knows better than Yahweh.
Right.
Right, exactly. And that's why we have a multiplicity of sources to compare and choose from to see, you know, who's got this right, who's doing a better job of translating.
We need all the sources that we can get, because there are translational errors in the Septuagint. I mean, there are... First, when you translate history, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you translate prophecy and you are forced in your translation to make certain interpretations
right.
of words, I mean, you've got to screw up.
Right, right. Well, I had an interesting exchange with...
I read that. I've had exchanges since... Over the past few months, I've had a couple of exchanges with Mr. Harris.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Who is absolutely obstinate that he's right and
yeah.
he's the only inspired.
Well, for one thing, he states that the Apocrypha, are justly tossed out. But, you know, he's a promoter of the Septuagint, but the Apocrypha are in the Septuagint. So how can you argue that you believe in the Septuagint and still want to toss the Apocrypha out? What tradition are you following?
Right,
you know?
And the Septuagint tradition, I wouldn't say it included all of the Apocrypha, but it always included much of the Apocrypha.
Right, right. Yeah, and so, you know, to make the blanket statement that it's correct to toss the Apocrypha out or that they're not canonical, well, who decided whether it's canonical or not? Some
right,
Catholic.
Right, the story of Susanna and Bell and the Dragon and the books of the Maccabees, they
oh,
absolutely
yeah.
belong.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Yeah, and Esdras 1 and 2 and Maccabees, absolutely. That stuff belongs.
The book of Esdras found in the Apocrypha is a far better book of Esdras than the book of Ezra found in the King James.
Right.
I'm sorry, I wrote a paper on it that Clifton had. I wrote some serious notes on Ezra and Nehemiah and their chronology that Clifton just published in
yes.
Watchman Teaching Letter number 133.
Right. So it absolutely mystifies me that he can argue in favor of the Septuagint and then still toss out the Apocrypha. It's just, you know, it's mystifying. You know, what kind of logic is that? Well, in
right,
any
that's
case,
the logic.
Yeah, right. Okay, verse 6. Even as David also describes the blessedness of the man to whom God imputes righteousness without works. Now, what would be he be referring to here in terms of David's ascription to the blessedness of our people, of course, righteousness without works?
Well, righteousness apart from rituals.
Okay.
All right, not righteousness apart from good deeds.
Right.
That's, you know, good works are totally different than the works of the law, which are the rituals.
Right. And
David, as we saw when we discussed the book of Hebrews at length, David really didn't appeal to the Levitical law and the covenant at Sinai as much as he appealed to the promises to Abraham and the Melchizedek priesthood in his writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In other words, he knew that those things were permanent and that this Levitical law and these rituals were temporary.
Mm-hmm.
David knew that. He understood that.
Right. Okay. All right. Verse 7, saying, blessed are they whose iniquities are forgiven and whose sins are covered. Well, that's blatantly straightforward. Okay. Verse 8, blessed is the man to whom the Lord will not impute sin.
Right. And we all screw up. But,
that's right.
I mean, if you have a good heart, and you mean to do well all the time.
Yes.
And you could look at David and Bathsheba.
Right.
And look at David and the census. And David screwed up a few times, but, I mean, he had a great heart, and he was a man after Yahweh's own heart.
Right.
David
right.
loved Yahweh. He wanted to do good. He wanted to do the will right. of God, even though we're all human.
Yes.
We're all going to make mistakes.
And he made serious mistakes,
and those,
David did. Yes.
It's clear that those mistakes are not imputed to us when we do good most of the time.
Right. And because we are just plain forgiven by Yahweh, you know, because he knows our hearts, and he knows if we're – and this is one of the big differences between biblical justice versus the so-called justice we have today. Whereas, you know, since Yahweh does know our hearts, he knows when we do things – when we commit sin by accident and instead of doing it deliberately, okay – but in the so-called courts of law today, if you run a stop sign or go too or speed, and they clock you speeding, the extenuating circumstances are not considered. You know, it
right.
happens.
That's legalism.
That's right, and that's what we've got today: legalism. You technically you broke the law. I remember I had an incident where I got.
That's because the Pharisees are in charge of the country.
Right.
We have legalism.
Right. I got on the tollway from Indiana to Chicago one time, and there was road construction, okay? But the traffic was so heavy, and there were trucks on either side of me, that I couldn't, you know, I didn't see any speed limit signs, okay? And so I was going the normal speed. I always travel, and so was just about everybody else, okay? And so... some cop pulls me over and said, "Didn't you see the speed limit sign?" I said, "No, I didn't. There were too many trucks. You know, I didn't see any speed limit sign." And so, but he clocked me at going, you know, over the temporary lowered speed limit. And I tried to explain this to the judge. "Hey, you know, I've traveled on this highway 100 times, and I know what the speed limit is."
Well, they don't care. You're gonna pay
the ticket. He did not care.
Nope.
I said, "Damn. I want to punch this guy."
Yeah.
You know?
Well.
And so, yeah, it's legalism.
That's what it is.
Yeah, there's no consideration for extenuating circumstances. And, of course, Yahweh, being just, takes these things into consideration. Okay? Verse 9, comes this blessedness then upon the circumcision only or upon the uncircumcision also? For we say that faith was reckoned to Abraham for righteousness. Okay, what's he talking about here?
Well, he's not talking about anybody who's circumcised, as we're going to see.
Okay.
Remember, Ishmael was circumcised.
Right.
He's not talking about anybody who's uncircumcised. He's talking about the circumcision and the uncircumcision of Israel.
Yes.
He's already told these people that are Israelites.
Right.
And he's already told them that Abraham was their forefather according to the flesh.
Right.
So this the scope of this... And we'll see that later too. Is definitely narrowed only to the children of Israel.
Okay. Yeah. And so, in general, for people who have not heard our discussions previously, the circumcision is generally speaking those Judahites who practice the rituals of the law in the temple, you know, and thereabouts,
and not the Edomites.
They're not the Edomites.
Distinguish in Romans chapter 9.
Yeah, they're absolutely not the Edomites who came later and started and who overthrew true Judah and started practicing these rituals. And the uncircumcision is generally speaking the Israelites of the dispersion who were not practicing the law of the temple rituals. Okay?
Yeah.
That's the general distinction between the circumcision and uncircumcision, contrary to the popular view that the uncircumcision means all non-Israelites.
And that's going to become more and more evident as we proceed through Romans.
Okay, verse 10. How was it then reckoned when he was in circumcision or in uncircumcision? Not in circumcision, but, okay, this is really confusing language here. What's the verse 10 talking about?
Okay, this is a rhetorical question.
Yes.
How then was it accounted? Meaning the righteousness.
Okay.
Being in circumcision or in uncircumcision?
Okay.
A question.
Right.
And then a statement. Not in circumcision, but in uncircumcision. In other words, Abraham was deemed just by Yahweh while he was uncircumcised.
Okay.
So Paul's making the point that this circumcision doesn't account for anything. And he received, and this is verse 11.
Right.
And he received a sign of
yes.
circumcision.
Okay.
A seal of the righteousness of faith that he had in uncircumcision.
Right.
In regard to his being the father of all those who are believing.
Yes.
Now, they really misuse that.
Well,
right.
It's not
all those of anybody who are believing.
Yeah, right.
It's all those of Israel who are believing in a state of uncircumcision. And there Paul's talking about the dispersed of Israel who were going to accept the gospel, which they did, and even though they are not circumcised.
Right, right.
Because the prophets said that the hearts will be circumcised, and Paul discussed that with the Romans in chapter 2 and of this epistle.
Yes, yeah. So you can't take verse 10 out of the context of the discussion of Abraham himself before he himself
was...
Yes? Hello? Hello?
Well, it looks like Eli got cut off, so I'll just...
I'm still here.
Okay. I thought we lost you.
Yeah, I thought I lost you. Okay, something happened there. All right, okay, let's go to verse 11. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had yet being uncircumcised. Very interesting statement. What do you make of that?
Well, the circumcision is not the covenant. And the Jews confuse that.
Ah, yes.
And Abraham already had this faith.
Yes.
He already had these promises.
Yes.
And the circumcision was the sign to him and his descendants that they had them.
Yes.
That's all it was.
This is the symbol of the fact that they had faith and righteousness.
Right.
Interesting. Okay. That he might be the father of all them that believe, though they may not be circumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. And again, we're only talking about the literal descendants of Abraham through Isaac, correct?
And Paul has reinforced that many times.
Mm-hmm.
We can't read the Judeo-Christians
in
the mainstream churches love to take two or three or sometimes even one verse from the Bible and read it by itself and then apply it the way they want to.
Right, exactly.
And that's just crazy.
Yeah, right. Take it out of context and do with it what thou wilt.
Right. That's mad.
Yeah, but here the Judeo-Christian view of this verse is even more ridiculous because they automatically assume that the circumcision means Jews, okay, and that the uncircumcision means everybody else in the world.
Well, right.
That's clearly not what this is talking about. We're talking about the descendants of Abraham through Isaac, and that's all it could be talking about. Okay?
I illustrated that to them.
Yeah, yeah. And you are cutting out for some reason. I don't know if I just cut out in your headset, too. But we'll just proceed because, we'll just get through this. Okay, here we go. Verse 12. And the father of circumcision to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had been being yet uncircumcised. Okay, so we're talking about the faith of our father Abraham. We're not talking about modern Judeo-Christianity, okay?
Right, and here he says our father Abraham.
Okay, you're right.
He doesn't repeat forefather.
Okay.
However, that's already been said. How many times does he need to say it?
Yeah, okay. We have, this is Southern California, probably Gary. Gary, you have a question or comment here?
Yeah, it goes all the way back to your conversation about 8 minutes ago.
Okay.
On the Apocrypha.
Apocrypha. Oh, right. Okay.
Okay, what's absolutely amazing about this, we blame the Catholics for a lot of stuff, and that's
right.
Deservingly.
Yes.
And the reason I know about the Catholics, I went to Catholic school, and that's why I've become a lawbreaker, because I didn't, this Pope made all laws, and he violated cross laws, so since I'm a Catholic, I get to violate all the laws.
Right.
Anyway, they are the ones that had the Apocrypha in their Douay version.
Right.
Well, they only have 6 books of it.
Okay.
And I think that the 6 books, I'm pretty sure it's Judith and Tobit, and 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees, the additions to Esther, and the 6th book is lost on me. I'm sorry. I don't know which one it is.
Yeah, and then,
well, what I was trying to say, though, is at least they still, Catholics in the Douay version, which is the Masoretic, still carries them, even till today.
Well,
King James, Now, 1611 carries them.
Right.
And they were taken out, I think, around, I can't recall, but there was a certain time era that a lot of stuff happened there.
Right.
They were taken out of the King James. And
right.
One of the things that I learned as I listened to, of course, Pastor Eli, Pastor Dan, mm-hmm. other identity pastors that know that the Apocrypha belongs there, and I imagine
right.
Bill would probably say the same thing, is because it, in one of the books, it identifies who Israel is and where they went.
Right.
And
well, also,
that would be that book actually isn't. It's in the King James Apocrypha, but it was left out of the Septuagint editions that I've seen because there's no Greek manuscript of it.
Oh, interesting.
And that book is called Second Esdras in the Apocrypha.
Mm-hmm.
It's not called Second Esdras by scholars.
I see.
It's two Esdras in the Apocrypha, but there's no Greek. It's found, I think, only in Latin or maybe some Eastern manuscripts.
Interesting. Okay.
It tells where Israel went.
Right.
And, of course, those imposters,
mm-hmm.
you know, like they've always been, ever since Cain, who tried to bring up his first Monsanto to God.
Yeah.
Have always tried to put themselves as the chosen.
Right.
And
right.
they have done everything they can to hide us or try to get us out of the way so they could take our inheritance.
That's right.
So
well, there are other things in the apocryphal books, like in 1 Maccabees, it explains in part that the Dorian Greeks, the Spartans, are actually dispersed Israelites.
Right.
In 1 Maccabees, it also gets into the Edomite absorption a little. In the story of Susanna and Daniel, Daniel accuses these Judeans as being Canaanites.
Right, right.
There are wisdom books, and some of the wisdom, I forget exactly which one. It might be the wisdom of Solomon, or it might be the wisdom of Sirach. One or the other explains how the Edomites had signed on with the Babylonians and helped destroy Jerusalem.
Right.
And tear the temple down. There's a lot in the Apocrypha that is anti-Antichrist.
Right. It helps to explain in many places the difference between Edomites and Judahites.
Well, Pastor Eli and Bill, to what you guys have just stated, would it be fair to say from that information that Esau, Edom, Aduma
mm-hmm.
would just prefer that we don't know that?
That's right.
Because if we knew it, we might go forward and say, wait a minute, there's a identification problem here.
There are also 3 or 4 clear scriptures in the Apocrypha that support two seed line.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's many, you know. And there are several references in the Apocrypha to Israelites outside of Judea. Okay. I believe there's certainly one reference to the 12 tribes scattered, or maybe I'm thinking of Josephus. Yeah, I think I'm thinking of Josephus. Where he says that there are only 2 tribes subject to the Romans, that the other 10 are in Asia, meaning Asia Minor, and they're such a great multitude that they can't be numbered.
Well,
Asia Minor was Iraq.
I have cited Josephus in some of my historical essays to help demonstrate
yes.
that the Parthians and the Alans and the so-called northern barbarians are really Israelites.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's very clear in Josephus.
Yes, and those northern barbarians were referred to by the Romans as the Germans.
Well, right, and the Parthians and the Alans are both clearly
yes.
so-called Indo-European Aryan peoples.
Right, right.
Well, the thing that happened with the Greeks and the Romans, we're used to seeing the Scythians come down and do whatever they're going to do, and then all of a sudden you had some people, you know, that had real dark hair and real dark eyes, and their skin was sort of, as they would say today, olive.
Olive colored, right.
And they said, oh, who are you guys? Oh, we're Scythians.
Oh, right.
And the Romans and the Greeks said, do we have stupid written on our forehead?
Right.
And they said, no. From now on, we're going to call the Scythians, the true Scythians, meaning genuine.
Yes.
They're going to call them Gamai, which today is
German.
Was any Gentile?
German, yeah. The German.
Well, Gary, I understand where you got that account from, but that's not the account.
Okay. All right, Bill's cutting out for some reason.
That's because he was about ready to correct me, and he's
Northern tribes from France to the Black Sea were called Galatahi.
Okay.
By the Greeks. Okay, and all their writing.
Yeah.
And Strabo, who's writing in Greek, explains the origin of the word German was that because the Germans who were east of the Rhine and north of the Danube were believed to be fairer and blonder than the Germans, the Germanic tribes who were occupying modern-day France or Gaul
and the
region south of the Danube, that they were called Germanis because the Romans esteemed them to be more pure Germans.
Okay. All right.
Or more, would that be where your Swedes, your Norwegians, and and not the Dutch?
Yeah, and
they're all Israelites.
That was the Roman perspective, but I think I have a six-part series on my website that pretty much proves that all of those Germanic tribes came from the same origin.
That's right. They're all Israelites, yes. Okay. All right. Thank you, Gary. Yeah, that's we definitely want to establish the fact that these Israelites were their heritage is verified in the Apocrypha, and the question being, who is responsible for removing the Apocrypha from the King James Version? Very few people are aware that the original King James Version included the Apocrypha. And one of the ideas one of the things I read about it was that here in America, the revolutionary publishers, because the demand for Bibles was so great, they simply excluded some of the Apocryphal books to get them out quicker. That's one thing I read about it. But in my opinion, it was the primary problem occurred around the 1850s when some editor decided to remove them. It might have been a guy by the name of Rothschild, okay?
I wonder if their noses had that little action on it.
Yeah, because that's the era during which the Rothschilds started getting heavily into the publishing business, okay? And, but I haven't done a lot more research on that, but that's a very interesting question. Who did it and why were the Apocrypha removed from the King James Version?
It had anything to do with those black nobles in Europe.
Yeah, it could be. All right, Gary, thank you for the comment, okay?
God bless.
All right, God bless. Okay, verse 13.
Well, I would like to make a basic point about Romans chapter 4 in general here.
Oh, okay.
Here in Romans 4, and this is going to become evident absolutely in the next few verses, Paul is basically tailoring his message to his audience.
Yes.
He's saying the same things that he said in his epistle to the Hebrews.
Okay.
That the Old Covenant and the Levitical laws and the rituals and the definitions of sin oriented towards sacrificial atonement were temporal.
Right.
And the promises to Abraham were apart from those, and they were permanent.
Yes.
And this is a major theme of Hebrews, and no particular citation can quantify this by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul also stressed a voluntary obedience in Hebrews, and he does it here.
Yes.
And in Hebrews 10:26, I'll say, for our doing wrong voluntarily after receiving the knowledge of the truth, no longer for wrongdoing does the sacrifice remain.
Mm-hmm.
And basically that's
right.
What Paul is also going to explain here in Romans 4.
Yeah, yeah. Well, your first initial comment when you began your explanation reminds me of one of the common criticisms made against Paul, namely that in a couple of places he says, I speak to you as Judeans or as Judahites, and then I speak to these others as non-Judahites. And they assume that what he's saying, he's admitting to being two-faced, speaking one gospel to one group and a different gospel to another group.
Right, and those people are just absolutely ignorant making those statements.
Yes.
Now I'm going to explain something that's always been very interesting to me.
Okay.
And the word polis in Greek means rest.
Okay.
But solis is also a Greek word.
Okay.
Even though it's a Hebrew name, it's a Greek word.
Okay.
It means to straddle.
Okay.
Paul straddled Judaism and paganism.
Mm-hmm.
Paul was learned in Judaism,
yes,
but he was also learned in the classics.
Right.
He was absolutely unique for his mission.
Yes.
He could go into any assembly hall and talk to the Judeans as a Judean.
Right.
And to the Greeks as a Greek.
Right. Right.
No other apostle could do that.
That's right.
Peter, John, Matthew, they did not have that classical education.
So he's not saying that I'm two-faced and I tailor my message to the audience.
Well, no. It's a gift. I don't believe that I have it.
Yeah.
I have a very difficult time talking to Judeo-Christians on their terms.
Yeah, right.
And if you could talk to identity people and the people who are racially cognizant on their terms, and then talk to identity people, to Judeo-Christians on it, you would be doing what Paul was doing.
That's right.
And that would be a gift. And that's what Paul had. Paul had that gift.
Yeah, and isn't there a distinction to be made also between teaching meat versus milk? You have to tailor your message to what people can understand.
Absolutely. I think Pastor Greg has joined us.
Yeah. Pastor Greg, how do you feel about that? Isn't it true that, you know, when you teach identity and you have a group of people who are new to the message versus a group of people who've been around it for a while, don't you have to tailor your message to the particular group?
Yeah, I mean, some people just can't handle the meat. They get upset and they start backing away from it.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we teach the meat with barbecue sauce. Hot barbecue sauce. All right. Okay, very good. All right, let's continue here. Okay, Pastor Greg, we're in Romans chapter 4. I'm just getting ready to quote verse 13, okay? For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. Very interesting. Now, of course, the mainstream Judeo-Christians jump on this verse and say, well, you see, we don't have to obey the law to be saved. What's it really saying here, Bill?
Well, it's saying that this is not saying we don't have to obey the law. This is saying that the promise is not through the law.
Right.
There's something serious to distinguish there. The promise is to Abraham and his offspring.
Right.
That he is to be the heir of the society or the world or however you want to translate cosmos here. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that the law is done away with.
Mm-hmm.
That means that the promise is not through the law.
Yeah.
That's all it means, that the promise exists before the law. Paul explains in Galatians that the promise existed 430 years before the law was given at Sinai.
Right, right. And so that's all it means.
Absolutely.
Means that it preceded the giving of the law. It does not in any way say that the law has been excluded from Israel and Israel no longer needs to obey it.
Right, but Abraham was obedient.
Yes.
On account of his faith.
Yeah, and he was obedient both ways. He obeyed the law. And he obeyed the faith.
Absolutely.
Yes.
He told his servant, don't you dare take a wife for the Canaanites.
That's right.
For Isaac.
Exactly. And if he had, and I quoted yesterday from the book of Jubilees, the conversation between Abraham and Rebekah, Abraham telling Rebekah, I can see that this guy Esau is a bad seed.
You have faith.
Yes.
And you believe Yahweh, then you should know in your heart that you better try to comply with his laws.
That's right. Okay, so verse 14, for if they which are of the law be heirs, faith is made void, and the promise made of none effect. So getting back to your explanation of verse 13, this makes perfect sense. Since the promises and the covenants were actually made before the giving of the law.
The law can't annul the promise.
Right. The law really doesn't have anything to do with it.
Right. And this is actually also because Paul knew we'll get to Romans 9 in a couple of segments, but Paul knew that a lot of those keeping the law, or at least professing to keep the law, they're not Israelite.
Mm-hmm. And would that be the meaning then of verse 15? Because the law works wrath, for where no law is, there is no transgression.
Right. Where there's no law, it's not that there's no transgression. It's that the transgression is not, it can't be reckoned if there's no law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could drive recklessly through a school zone, but if there's no law forbidding you from driving recklessly through a school zone on the books, then a cop can't give you a ticket.
Right, but you should
still
know better.
But you're still screwing up.
You should still know better.
Right.
Right, okay.
Well, that's what a lot of these Judeo preachers are teaching, that we're not under the law. And I've asked them, you know, if we're not under the law, what's... They said, well, it's breaking God's law. I said, no, wait, you said we are not under the law.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, we're not. I said,
right.
Well, what's sin?
Well, it's interesting, you know, taking a drive, being a good driver into consideration. You know, if we're not under the law and there is no law, you know, well, why aren't these same people just driving through red lights all the time? You know, I mean, if we're not under the law, you know, well, why do you obey man's law and throw God's law out the window? You know, if you keep on running red lights, you're going to get smashed into one of these days, you know.
Well, that's like Matthew 15 talks about. You follow the traditions of man and cast away the commandments of Yahweh.
That's right. And that's exactly what these bastard priests have done. Okay, verse 16. Therefore, it is a faith that it might be by grace, to the end the promise might be sure to all the seed. Let me just stop right there, because Paul is clearly saying here that the promises were given to the seed of Israel.
It's certain to all of the offspring. It's explicit. This can't be, there's no spiritualizing this.
Yeah, that's right.
Because this is Abraham's seed that's being spoken of.
Right.
It's not some replacement seed.
Right.
It's Abraham's sperma.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Continuing the verse, not to that only which is of the law, but to also that which is of the faith of Abraham, who is the father of us all. So isn't he simply saying here that we're talking about both the dispersed Israelites who did not receive the law at Sinai versus those who did? And his final statement is, he is the father of us all, both groups, these two groups.
Absolutely, and that's, Paul is only addressing Israel.
Yes.
And that's the only way that could be.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul has explained to the Romans over and over again in Romans chapter 1, in Romans chapter 2, in Romans chapter 3, in Romans chapter 4, that they are Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
He just has not said, okay, you Romans are Israelites.
Yes.
He hasn't said that.
Yes.
But he said it 20 times.
Right.
He's saying it here.
Yeah.
It's the whole book all the way through is to the dispersed seed of Israel,
mm-hmm.
you know, period. I mean, all, you know, how many times in the Old Testament he said, go tell my people Israel, go tell my people Israel, go tell my people Israel. My God, how many times do they have to be able to read it before their eyes are finally open to who they're talking to?
Right.
And then nothing changed in the New Testament. Yahshua said, I came only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel,
right,
and go only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So when he's saying all, he's talking to Israel.
All Israel. And and still in those broad term pronouns like all and every and whomsoever, cannot be generalized to beyond the Adamic Israelite world, because you know those words aren't always used for the entire world and for
right.
all races.
And we're going to see Paul actually define all of his terms.
Okay.
In this epistle.
Okay.
In the next chapter, we're going to see that Paul defines the word man as
mm-hmm.
Adam.
Okay. All right. Well, let's continue with verse 17, as it is written, I have made you a father of many nations. Of course, now, isn't this a direct quote from Genesis? Because we're talking, I think we, in Genesis 12, where the promises were given through Abraham. That,
it's a direct quote of Genesis 17:5.
Oh, okay.
And I'd like to say, I'd like to give about 2 minutes of my program from last Saturday when you guys weren't here.
Okay.
That in Romans 4:17-18, the faith of Abraham is hereby defined by Paul as the belief that Abraham's offspring would indeed become many nations.
Yes. Okay.
And that only his chosen seed mm-hmm. could share that faith.
Right.
As even
right.
Abraham's other sons were sent away.
Okay.
This is even in spite of the fact that Ishmael was circumcised,
mm-hmm.
and circumcision is therefore shown to be not good enough.
Right.
Promise
right.
is through a specific lineage
yes.
and not through a ritual.
Right. And we saw in the book of Galatians that the offspring of Ishmael are not acceptable for the covenant. Paul is certainly saying that, okay? And Paul certainly agrees that the Canaanites are not acceptable for the covenant in other places.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And if I may continue, now
yes.
the church imagines the promise to Abraham to be that many nations would become Abraham's offspring.
Right.
But the promise says that many,
yes.
that Abraham's offspring would become many nations.
Well, now let's look at this word. It says many. It doesn't say all. It
well,
only
right.
says many.
It doesn't say anything about believers.
That's right. Well, now, before him whom he believed. It's the next phrase in this verse. Okay, well, let's take it from, as it is written, I have made you a father of many nations. Of course, it's only referring to those nations who are his direct descendants, right?
And if you read 18, it's
okay.
going to say, who contrary to expectation, in other words, it's amazing that you should expect this
yes.
from a 99-year-old woman,
right?
In expectation, believed, for which he would become a father of many nations according to the declaration, not according to the belief in Christ.
Yeah, right.
According to the declaration, thus your offspring will be.
Right.
Quoting Genesis 15:5.
So it's very exclusive to his direct offspring. There's no other way this can be interpreted.
Absolutely. And Paul went to those offspring.
Right.
There's no Paul in Egypt, Libya, India, China, Swaziland, Nigeria.
Yeah, yeah.
There's only Paul
yeah.
in the white nations of Europe.
Or the land of the Khazars.
Right. There's
yeah.
no Paul in Khazaria.
Yeah.
There's no
right.
Paul in Siberia.
Yeah, exactly.
Mongolia.
Right.
There's only Paul amongst the white nations of Europe.
That's right.
They are, as history would prove, descended from the children of Israel.
That's right. That's right, absolutely. Okay, verse 19. And being not weak in faith, he considered not his own body now dead when he was about 100 years old, neither yet the deadness of Sarah's womb. Okay, it's a very specific reference to our history, the history of our four parents, Abraham and Sarah. He staggered not at the promise of God through unbelief, but was strong in faith, giving glory to God. So, in other words, the faith he's talking about is the faith, the very specific type of faith that Abraham had, which is only possible in the descendants of Abraham. Isn't that what we're being told here?
Right. Paul here defines the faith of Abraham as Abraham's belief that his descendants would become many nations.
Right.
That's the faith of Abraham.
Okay.
The faith of Abraham is not that Yahweh would not allow Isaac to die. That's what the church teaches.
Mm-hmm.
But the faith of Abraham was that whether or not Isaac died, Abraham would have many offspring that would become many nations.
Right, right. So he believed Yahweh when Yahweh made him that promise.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, verse 21, and being fully persuaded that what he had promised, he was able also to perform, as we just said. Okay. Abraham fully believed Yahweh's promise that he would deliver. Okay. Of course, we can't always rely on men, but we can rely on Yahweh. Verse 22.
That's the point.
Yep. And therefore, it was imputed to him for righteousness. Okay. So, in other words, now, you know, and here this is another area where the universalists say, well, see, you don't need to have the law to be considered righteous. You
the word righteousness is simultaneous with law.
Right, right. Because righteousness, it translated directly in English, means justice, okay? And how can there be any justice without law? What rules are you going by if you don't have law? You know, so the very idea of righteousness implies the law. Isn't that correct, Bill?
Yes, the word is dikaiosune, or dikaios, and it means justice.
Yes.
That's
yes.
what it basically means.
And so if someone practices injustice, then that's the opposite. You know, so
that would be disobedience,
right,
and unbelief.
Yeah, yeah. So,
well, you know, a lot of the preachers believe that, you know, if you're a law keeper, then you believe that by your works you are saved.
Okay.
And you know, you can't make them understand that that's not what we believe. It's not by our works. It's by our faith and the promise,
mm-hmm,
that we keep the law because we love Yahweh. Because,
right,
you know, he said, you know, don't eat shellfish, let's say. Well, not say shellfish,
right,
but let's say, you know, shrimp, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Right, forbidden food.
So because we love him, we don't eat those things he said not to eat.
Right. Right.
No, not so we can win a crown or a jewel or,
right,
a ring or whatever. It's because we love him. And why did he say don't eat it? I don't know. He said it.
Yeah,
and
right,
that should settle.
Well, because
it.
It's good for us. It's healthier for us not to eat that stuff.
Right. I mean,
it's also healthier for the ocean.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it is. It's unhealthy. But what I'm saying is he said it, and why did he say it? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He said it.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that implies faith. And, you know, there's a difference between, you know, like if your father tells you not to play with fire, okay, you trust your father that what he's teaching you is good, okay?
Right.
And so, but you may have to find out the hard way. And, you know, play with fire once in a while, and you find, oh, that's what my dad was trying to teach me, why not to play with fire, okay?
Right.
And so righteousness is something, well, number one, you can discover it by, you know, by accident, or you can believe the Father, okay?
Right.
Yeah. All right, so verse 23, now it was not written for his sake alone that it was imputed to him. Okay, Bill, what is this verse saying?
Well, it says, moreover, it was not written regarding him only that,
okay,
it, that
all right,
righteousness was accounted to him.
Right.
And then it continues in verse 24.
Yeah.
But also regarding us.
Yes.
To whom it is destined to be accounted.
Right.
To those who believe in he who raised Yahshua, our prince or,
right,
our Lord, from death.
Okay. Now here, of course, the word belief is inserted here. And so, you know, your universalist will insist that now, as long as you're a believer, that you can be a son of Abraham.
Well, this is saying as long as you're one of Abraham's offspring.
Right.
And then you will believe, and then,
yeah,
it's accounted to you.
Right, right.
That's what Paul's saying.
Now, it's interesting that most of these Judeo-Christian preachers that teach this stuff are, in fact, Abraham's offspring, aren't they?
Right. But some of those,
yeah,
Zimbabweans and Nigerians that the Catholic Church is
right
lately
turning
because
into Catholic,
just run out of Irishmen.
Yeah, right. Because
and
the Irishmen and the Germans
are
now Lutherans,
and they'll never be Abraham's offspring.
Yeah, and plus the quality of your belief and what you actually believe.
Well, that's the point. What do you believe?
Yeah.
Ask a Negro what he believes,
mm-hmm,
and he'll tell you something totally different.
Right.
Than what Pastor Greg would tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this, obviously, the faith of Abraham is that Abraham's offspring would become many nations.
Right.
It's the object of our Christian identity endeavor to identify those nations.
That's right.
Those people can have the faith.
Yeah.
Nobody else can have this faith.
Right. So generalizing this word belief to anybody or anybody who believes, quote unquote, in Jesus, okay, and whatever that means.
Right.
That's certainly not the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You can't generalize the word belief that far.
If you take the Virgin out of Catholicism,
mm-hmm,
you will lose Latin America in a night.
Right. Exactly. Because they believe, they worship the Virgin. They worship the Mother Mary.
And the little baby.
Right. And very little of the Catholic faith is really Jesus-based, and certainly very little of it is based on the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
And even, I mean, from what I've seen of the Protestant sects, they don't go beyond John 3:16 and Matthew chapters 5 and 6, which is the Sermon on the Mount.
Right.
And then they try to apply that to everybody.
Right, exactly. But, of course, it only applies to kinsmen and neighbors. You know,
right.
And so, since we're...
Well, you know, John 3:16, you know, because he sent his son for the world, they take that. But they can't understand it, that he's talking about the dispersed in the world, wherever the dispersed seed's at in
right.
the world. Because the book's written to Israel, period.
He's talking about
Israel.
The society.
Yeah,
right.
Israelite society, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not about the whole world, you know. And so, and here's another, you know, that translation, that use, the translation of the word cosmos in Greek into the English world, it permits the universalist to say, "Oh well, here, you know, we're supposed to convert the world."
Right, but that's not what it. First, that's not what the word "world" means.
Okay.
All right. If you look at the American Heritage College Dictionary, you'll find that the word, the English word "world," actually comes from, I mean, obscure to us,
yeah.
some ancient Saxon terms which mean the age of man.
Okay. Oh, all right. The age of man. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
And it doesn't mean the planet.
Yes.
And that's in the American Heritage College Dictionary. If you look up world and follow it back to its Indo-European roots, you'll find that that's what the word means.
So it's more like worldview, more closely allied to the term worldview. But then in the Greek, the word cosmos doesn't mean planet either, does it?
Right. In the Greek, and I can explain this. It'll take a couple of minutes. In the Greek, in the Bible, there were three words which the King James translators decided to translate world.
Okay.
The first one is strictly temporal. The first one I'll mention.
Mm-hmm.
It's aeon, aion.
Yes. Okay.
It's the word we get aeon from. It's a span of time.
Yes.
It's never spatial.
Okay.
It's only temporal, and it means an age. It should have never been translated world
yes.
in the modern sense of the word world.
Yes. Yes.
The second one is oikoumene, and oikoumene literally means the dwelling space.
Okay.
And in the Greek world, in the Greek mind,
yes.
that meant the dwelling place of basically the white races.
Our world.
Right.
Our world.
Of the Greco-Roman,
yes.
Persian civilized world.
Yes.
That was the oikoumene. It's
yes.
described by Strabo. It's described by other Greek writers.
Yes.
It stretched from Iberia to the Near East, and they knew yes. of people in Africa, of the blacks in Africa,
right.
and people in China, and those people were never considered part of the oikoumene.
Right.
Those people lied outside the bounds
yes.
of the oikoumene.
Our world versus their world. That's
right,
versus,
and
yes.
that's clear where Luke in chapter 2 says, Caesar went out to command and commanded that the whole world be taxed.
Yes.
That word is oikoumene.
Yeah. Well,
now, cosmos.
Yes.
The
okay.
word cosmeo is a verb, and it means to adorn or to decorate.
Right.
And a cosmos is actually an ornament
okay.
or a decoration.
All right.
And when applied to the oikoumene, okay,
yes.
the cosmos is the adornment of the living space,
okay,
which in our language could best be translated society.
Yeah, okay.
It's the order and arrangement of the oikoumene.
Yeah. Well, wouldn't it also include like the buildings, the streets, you
yes.
know, et cetera, churches?
Yes.
Yes.
It's the whole society.
Okay.
The buildings, the laws, the people.
Right.
It's the arrangement and order
okay.
of things.
So in other words,
cosmos is.
So in other words, it really cannot be assumed that the word "world" means planet.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So that's just silly. And then when the Romans went out to tax the world, they obviously couldn't tax those people that they weren't in control of.
Right. The Romans didn't go tax the.
They didn't go tax Africa.
The bunnies in a rainforest.
Yeah, they didn't go to China to tax the Chinese.
No.
Their influence didn't go that far. So the word world cannot possibly be interpreted as planet as the Judeo-Christians commonly do.
Right. And Luke clearly says the whole world.
Yes. Okay. But certainly it's the whole world within the Greco-Roman sphere of influence.
Absolutely.
So they had no influence outside that area.
That was it.
Yes. Okay. All right, well, we have one more verse.
And in fact, there were actually at that time some white people outside that area.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in fact, the Japhethites are reputed to have gone all the way to Japan. And that's reputedly how the word Japan got its name. Okay, verse 25. Who was delivered for our... Oh, let me back up to verse 24 because it sets up verse 25. But for us also to whom it shall be imputed, for if we believe on him that raised up Jesus our Lord from the dead, who was delivered for our offenses and was raised again for our justification. Now these pronouns are, O-U-R, is only speaking of Israel, right?
Well, absolutely. And this word justification, I'm sorry, I have to look at that.
Okay.
Oh, that's also dikaiosyn.
Okay.
But that means justification, but in a legal court in ancient Greece, it meant acquittal.
Okay.
And I translate it acquittal.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Yes.
Yahshua
yes.
Christ was raised so that Israel, in their marriage relationship with Yahweh, could be acquitted.
Right.
That their sin... And,
right.
and their straying and all that would not be imputed to them.
Right.
They would be reconciled to Yahweh.
Yeah.
And that's why we had a death and a resurrection of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that was
Yes.
That can only apply to people who were in that law relationship with
right.
Yahweh.
Exactly.
Which is only the children of Israel.
Right. And as Pastor Greg pointed out earlier, Jesus himself said, I come not. But unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
Absolutely.
Can't be any clearer than that. Okay. All right. Well, here, we got about 10 minutes left. Let's go into chapter 5. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, we're getting the picture here. We're simply talking about Israelites. We being justified by faith, not all the other races, not necessarily the whites outside of the dispersion, but, you know, we want to include them because everybody wants to have a peaceful life and a just world. Okay, verse 2. By whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand and rejoice in hope of the glory of God. Okay, well,
now,
yeah, we all have this hope, yeah.
Now, Paul uses this term access. Through whom, through Yahshua Christ,
okay.
We also have access by faith.
Okay.
Yahshua Christ is the door to sheep.
Yes.
Nobody sees the Father except through him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So Paul's saying through Yahshua Christ, we have access to Yahweh.
Yes.
However,
right.
The children of Israel were alienated from Yahweh
mm-hmm.
when they followed false gods and
right.
were divorced from Yahweh, and it's described back in the prophets.
Right.
Okay, so we had no access to God
mm-hmm.
and no communion
right.
to God during those centuries
right.
that we were alienated from
yeah.
him.
Well,
and
yes.
in this very paragraph, three times, Paul uses the word reconciled
yes.
in 5:10.
Yeah. Well, isn't it true then also today of those Israelites who reject this message and basically are trying to convert the rest of the world? Aren't they actually rejecting their Israelite heritage, and aren't they still alienated from Yahweh?
Well, right. They are, and I wish I had the citation handy, but I don't. There is a line in Paul's writings where he warns about those who make the blood of our redemption mm. common.
Right.
And that means to share it with people that it doesn't belong with.
Right. 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 Okay. All right. Verse 3. And not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that the tribulation works patience. Now, this is fascinating because in modern Judeo-Christianity, there is this pervasive idea that we no longer have to suffer. All we have to do is wait around for the rapture, and we're all forgiven anyway. Okay.
Well, then why do we have disease?
Then, yes.
Why do we have hunger? Why do we have these animals in our country committing all these crimes against us?
Right.
Why do we get into traffic accidents? Don't tell me we don't have tribulation.
Right.
The English word crisis and the Greek word for judgment, which is krisis, are the exact same word.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably a good reason for that.
Right, right, yeah. And so, you know, what they're teaching is, you know, Paul is clearly teaching that these tribulations are necessary for us to learn from these experiences and straighten us, okay? But the
right,
modern
and
today
Peter in his epistles talks about the trial by fire, which is this life.
That's right. That's right. And the Judeo-Christians just don't get that. They're teaching the exact opposite. That no, if you're a believer, you won't have tribulation.
And in the meantime, little children die,
yeah.
And people die before their time, and people get sick, and the Judeo-Christians stand there and shake their heads at God.
Yeah.
Why do you allow that? How dare you allow that?
Yeah.
Why
yeah.
does God allow that?
Yeah, because they don't understand the gospel. Okay. Verse 4, and patience, experience, and experience, hope. Okay. You know, we have to learn to be patient, experienced. Okay. This is all for our edification. Verse 5. And hope makes not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given to us. And, of course, you know, the context is still Israel here. And, you know, and the love of God, is, you know, since, from my perspective, since Yahweh breathed the breath of life into the Adamites exclusively, okay, now this doesn't mean that the other races don't have love or aren't capable of love, and we shouldn't even that we should not love them in a broader sense. But the love of our brethren, brotherly love, Adelphos, is exclusive to Israelites. Isn't that the case?
Well, you know, from what I've seen of the other races personally, they can have love in the sense of the Greek word orgēs, which means lust.
Okay.
But they can't
right.
have.
Right.
Love in the sense of the Greek word agape
right.
or
yeah.
agapo, which means brotherly love and charity.
Right, right.
That's my own personal opinion.
Right, and historically speaking, you know, when we see white Christendom, the societies that the white Christians have created, you know, where you know, you have justice, where you have tolerance in the sense of, you know, what's the term? You know, justice is blind. And, you know, tolerance in the sense of, you know, being presumed innocent until you're proven guilty, okay, that sort of thing. None of these other races have anything like that.
No,
and when,
they don't have a moral code.
Right.
Which is, they have situation ethics.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
And that is natural to them.
Yes,
and
yes.
Now we're all being taught that in our schools.
Yes.
And it's evil.
It
we
is evil.
Have a moral code that
yeah.
is not supposed to change.
And then when these non-Israelites and these non-white people come into our societies, they when they get the chance, they break our laws because
absolutely.
They don't care about our laws.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, that's what's wrong with our country right now. We've allowed these heathen to come in here, and they've broken Yahweh's laws.
Mm-hmm.
Yahweh said that no heathen temple is even supposed to stand in our land.
That's right.
And we allow Satan temples and mosques and everything else in this land. He said that if they're in our land, they have to obey his law.
That's right.
And we've allowed them to create their own laws and back down on what
yeah.
our law is supposed to be. You know, no prayer in school. You know,
mm-hmm.
take the word God off everything. Can't have the Ten Commandments, you know, on and on and on. We've allowed the humanists to come in and take away what he,
right,
and it's
you know,
absolutely
has for his people. And so it's no wonder that we're in the shape we're in right now today, because we've just allowed his law to be thrown out the window and we do nothing about it.
Yeah. Bill, you were saying there something
it's
there?
Ken is right. It's absolutely anti-Christian. Religious tolerance in the founding fathers' minds of this country was a Christian religious tolerance.
Right.
You could have any religion you want as long as it was Christian.
That's right.
Is Christian. In the Exodus, the children of Israel were told that even the stranger in your city must be forced to practice the Sabbath and keep the Sabbath.
Right.
And,
yeah.
and the
right.
merchants used to whine, the Canaanite merchants used to whine outside the gates of Jerusalem because they couldn't come in and sell their wares on a Saturday.
Right.
They
had
to sit there with their camels for 48 hours.
Yes.
Well, you know, even then, Nehemiah, you know, he said they came and set up outside the gates for one or two Sabbaths. And he went out there and said, listen, you come here again on the Sabbath day trying to sell your wares, I'm going to lay hands on you.
That's right. That's right.
So, you know, we need that kind of people today with
yeah.
people that are zealous for Yahweh
mm-hmm.
and his word.
Yeah.
Well, they've broken all that. Secular, the Jews have attacked us through humanism and secularism.
Right.
And through those two Jewish ideals, that they have destroyed Christian civilization.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Well, you know, it's just like this hate crime law. You know, I don't know if it got passed or what. But, you know, being a minister, if we preach against homosexuality and somebody from our congregation goes out and does something to a homosexual, then they can put us in prison for it.
Right.
Well, I guess it'll be down to the lion's den like it was with Daniel.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Sling the windows open and preach Yahweh's words.
Yeah, and the absurdity of this hate crimes legislation is simply the fact that, number one, we're just speaking out. You know, so at the very worst, what we can be guilty of is simply saying something. Yes,
right.
These homosexuals are infecting our children with deadly diseases.
Yes.
And that's okay, because Jewish freedom, the idea of freedom to a Jew, is the idea, is the ability to be a pervert.
Right.
In public.
Yeah. And the same thing goes with the abortion advocates. They will criticize us. They don't want us to criticize abortion, yet they're killing babies. What's
right.
worse, folks?
That's where Isaiah comes in, and he says, woe to them who take good for,
yes.
good, for good and good for evil.
And so they have brainwashed the society into thinking that the idea of criticizing an abortionist or criticizing a homosexual is worse than actually killing babies.
Yep. That's
hey, well, you believe
we
it.
Were told this would happen. We were told, we were warned explicitly that this would happen.
And
Yahweh
they think,
is true.
And they, think
the
we're,
is.
And they think we're nuts.
Well, you know, the ADL's one behind this thing. They're pushing it. And they know that we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And it's just another way to destroy us.
That's
and,
right.
And the thief came but to steal and to kill.
Yeah.
He
yeah.
came to steal our inheritance and to kill our race.
Yeah.
Any way they can do it.
Yeah. And I'm reminded where Jesus says, don't worry about the mote in my eye. Take the log out of your eye.
Yes.
Talk about a lack of perspective. To allow yourself to be so brainwashed that you can consider criticism to be a more hateful crime than actual death, causing the death of somebody.
We lose the culture war when we let the Jews in the media define the language.
That's right.
They're not homosexuals. They're perverts.
Right.
Don't use the word
example.
Yeah, and they're not gay either. They're pathetic.
Yeah, they're perverts, just like
yes.
you said, perverts.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. Okay.
Homosexual deviants, perverts,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah, in other words, you can't tell the truth.
You
the
can
truth.
Convince somebody maybe that a homo. You can take a fool and convince them that a homosexual could be a nice guy.
Right.
You can't take a fool and convince them that a sexual deviant is a nice guy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You don't want to be around a sexual deviant.
Yeah, well, it's just like the perversion of the, you know, the word illegal alien. To what do they call it? You know,
undocumented worker.
Undocumented worker. There you go. I knew that right. word had a euphemism for it. Yes.
Well, Italy. It was in the newspapers the other day. Somebody pointed out that. In fact, my mother pointed it out to me.
Uh-huh.
She called me over. She was on the internet upstairs, and she said, "Look at this. They're banning illegal immigration in Italy."
Uh huh.
Isn't it illegal in the first place?
Yeah, what part of the word illegal don't you understand? Talk about confusion. It's amazing. Okay, gentlemen, we're at the end of the 90 minutes. Bill, it's been great fun. I'm so happy that my computer got the screen up after all the trouble it had the last couple of days. And Pastor Greg, it's good to have you with us again.
Yeah, it's been a while. It's good
yeah,
to hear your voice.
Yeah, and now,
sorry, I was late.
Now next week I may possibly have a guest from Australia, and since there's a 17-hour difference, the Sunday show won't work for him. I think if my math is correct, 8 p.m. on Saturday night would be roughly 2 p.m. or something Australia time, actually the previous day because they're a day ahead of us. And so he requested either a Friday night slot or a Saturday night slot. So either next Friday or Saturday we'll devote to his name is Jonathan Gray, and he's an archaeologist and a historian, and he has equated the we were talking about earlier, the Catholic worship of the Virgin and Child, okay, with the story of Semiramis and Nimrod, okay?
Well, that, yes, and that has had several manifestations.
Right, right. And so he's going to talk about how this story originated in and how it was, let's say, stolen from Israelite heritage and became a myth of the secular and pagan world, okay, and has been appropriated by the pagan world when actually, you know, that story should be exclusively for Israel, okay? And so that's what he wants to talk about, is the history of Semiramis and Nimrod and how this virgin cult and, you know, became, you know, it's actually, you know, it became a temple prostitute, right? Really, you know? So,
right, but we have, we also, you know, we have this isn't, a lot of people try to use this to discredit Christianity.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, Isaiah says a virgin shall conceive.
Yes.
In 740 B.C.
Yeah.
So this isn't discrediting Christianity. This story must have been taken and dispersed. The Greeks read Hebrew literature.
Right.
And I'm sure that the Semites of Mesopotamia read Hebrew literature.
Right.
And being a related race, they understood a lot of the prophecies.
Right, right. Yeah, so he's going to explain how this whole concept was distorted, appropriated by Nimrod and Semiramis, and then, you know, appropriated for pagan rituals, okay?
Well, I would say it was appropriated maybe not by Nimrod and Semiramis, but by Assyrians
okay.
who attributed to Nimrod and
right,
Semiramis.
Right, yeah, yeah. But anyway, that's what he wants to talk about, and it's fascinating stuff, you know. So one of those nights next, either Friday or Saturday night, we'll have him on, okay? So we'll get that as soon as I can settle which night he prefers. Then I'll let you guys know as to what the schedule is, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right, Pastor Greg, thanks for joining us. Bill, a pleasure as always. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.
Thank you.
All right, and good night, everybody.
Good night.